Hello, and welcome to Sunday Stories.
I'm sorry, I can't do it. Hi guys, Becca and Lizzie here for a new mini-series that we hope you're going to love.
Absolutely. We're going to be reading some extracts from some farming books which have been released this year.
We'll be doing some interviews.
And sharing our thoughts along the way.
So, whether you're in the office
or in the field, grab a hot chocolate and flick through the pages.
So, for our first Sunday Stories, we're going to be reading a book that was just released this September.
So, the author, I'm sure most of you will recognise his name, and some people have said that he's done more for farming and the public perception of farming than anybody in the past 30 years with his TV series.
And I think he's got a bigger tractor than most.
Well, I think most of you will have guessed. Our book for this episode is Jeremy Clarkson's Diddly Squat, Till the Cows Come Home.
Well, we haven't got him for an interview yet, Bex, but we will be reading our favourite bits of the book. Well, to start off, I absolutely love the cover. I love Clarkson in his kind of look of, really, is that happening again?
And it's actually had some really good reviews from people in the agricultural industry as well. So the National Farmers Union, for example, said that Clarkson has brought an understanding of the many issues faced by farmers to the British public. And I completely agree with that. The amount of people who ask me, you know, have you seen Clarkson's farm? Have you seen what he's doing? Is that what really goes on a farm? So it started conversations, you know, with people who don't have any experience of farming whatsoever.
And Farmers Weekly have said, a deserving farming champion of the year. I agree on that one.
I can't knock him at all. And I mean, I guess in true Clarkson style, he's given his own perspective on the book and him writing it. I don't know anything about farming. It's like David Attenborough doing jet skiing or Nicholas Witchell saying, I'm going to be a cage fighter.
Well, hopefully, Clarkson, on your next book, you'll have a review printed from Beckham and Lizzie. Watch this space. Do I look very studious?
I've just got an itch on my nose.
So opening the book, the contents I really, really love because it's all split into an introduction and then the seasons. And I think for somebody who's not from a farming background, it really helps me to understand the breakdown of what really goes on throughout the year.
Absolutely. And it shows the split of work that does happen, those seasonal fluctuations. So yeah, it's so important.
So should we start off with the introduction?
Yeah, let's go.
Can't do a Clarkson accent, I'm afraid. So you're going to have to live with this northern gal. Hello. In my first book about life at Diddly Squat Farm, I explained how I'd survived a year of biblical weather, a forest of red tape, a lockdown, a herd of escaping sheep, 10 million vindictive bees, chickens, trout and supply chain issues. So it felt a little unsatisfactory to finish with a story about how I stopped a school trip from urinating in my garden. So, picking up where we left off, Diddly Squat's still going strong-ish. I continue to love what I'm doing, even though I'm not very good at it. You and me both, Jeremy. And to make things worse, I now have that most dangerous of things, a little knowledge. For instance, I know the difference between wheat and barley, and I know what oilseed rape is for, but what I know most of all is that farming is unbelievably hard work and not very well paid.
I think he summed that up.
There are times, though, when a spare moment presents itself and the sun is shining and I can lean on a gate chewing on a piece of grass. And then it's the best job in the world.
I genuinely think in one page he summed up challenges, but also the life you get is absolutely amazing when you get the chance to forget about the challenges, forget about the red tape and the sheep escaping. It's two halves, isn't it, of farming. There's the difficulties, but then there's, you know, that lucky thought that I get to work and maintain and look after this beautiful countryside.
I also really resonate with the fact that Clarkson here has said about how he has a bit of knowledge. He knows the difference between wheat and barley. And I think just little things like that, if you're not in the industry, you don't necessarily know. You don't understand, you know, where food comes from, or perhaps the difference between haylage and straw and, you know.
And it's a small win. It's a small win. It's a small step. But all of those little wins build up to give this, you know, this picture of knowledge later down the line. You know, if he sticks with farming, which by the sounds of it, he will. You know, you've got to just take those little steps of knowledge. We're going to move into the first chapter, which is summer. And we particularly liked a section on the animal welfare state. There's a cute little picture of a cow. She's got a hat on. She's chewing what looks to be a daisy. But actually, he's touching on a really important issue here. So there's one, well, a little paragraph in particular which resonated. In short, sheep reared here, and cows and pigs and all the delicious things we eat are treated with one eye very firmly wedged on their welfare, and to hell with the costs involved. That is emphatically not the case with many of the animals reared abroad. Now, I'm really glad he's touched on this point, because it is quite a difficult point, particularly now we're all struggling with the cost of living, and sometimes you simply can't afford to choose. But I really like the reminder that he's given us that things produced in this country have some of the highest welfare standards in the world.
And also that farmers care about their animals. They care about the welfare. And it's not always about the cost. Yes, it's a business, but their animals mean, and their livestock means so much to them.
Absolutely. I mean, I can use the example of us at home. We've had a sheep with a bad eye. Calling the vet out is expensive, but the treatment that we had been given her wasn't working. We're still treating her now, a couple of weeks down the line, and this is all cost. And, you know, we could find her dead in the field tomorrow from a completely unrelated reason. But we are still willing, and always will be willing, to invest that money in the veterinary care to make sure that she is as well as she can be at all times.
I also think as well, if you could sum up back British farming in any short paragraph, that does it. It goes straight to the point. It says what Britain stands for. And fair play, Clarkson.
Absolutely.
So we're now skipping to the next season, which is autumn. And I mean, how could we not pick out the section of how to crash a Lamborghini tractor? I should know all about tractor driving now. Well, I've drove Big Blue.
You should.
Although I didn't crash it.
Well, that is a good thing. I don't know what Ali would have said if you crashed it. I think we'd have had to run away very quickly.
So this section talks a bit about Caleb and Clarkson having a conversation. And while we're on the topic of that, how amazing was Caleb as an ambassador for our industry?
Absolutely. Hardworking and just a credit to young people starting out, you know, with their farming businesses.
I do think he was definitely a star in that show.
Definitely.
So Caleb starts the conversation. How have you done that? He asked crossly before the door was shut. Done all, sir, I mumbled. Can't you do anything properly? He wanted to know in a hands-on hips type of way. He did have a point on that one. Last year I swung off the farm drive onto the road and had travelled several hundred yards before I realised that I was towing an entire hedge in my wake. And then there was the barn I'd bent while trying to reverse a trailer into it. Oh, and a few bins I'd knocked over, and some gateposts. It's odd. I'm not a particularly clumsy driver when I'm in a car, but in a tractor I almost never get a day's work done without hitting something. Mostly, I suspect, this is because tractors are surprisingly hard to drive.
You see, I really like that because I guess from the outside we're looking in at Clarkson driving cars, you know, was part of his job. And I think it's really refreshing to see how he's acknowledged, do you know what? I drove for a living, and actually translating that into a tractor is really, really difficult.
I think it's just funny. I think I'd love to have a little bit of a challenge with Clarkson and Caleb versus Becca and Lizzie and see who does it better. Because I'm like the Clarkson of this duo, aren't I? You're the Caleb.
Oh, I think Caleb would beat me in a tractor driving. Clarkson continues to talk about his tractors. One minute you're smashing into your seat like you weigh 30 stone, and the next you're floating around like Jim Lovell in Apollo 13. Only, unlike Jim Lovell, you're in a wood, surrounded by trees, and you don't have Velcro-soled boots to keep you anchored to the floor. Plus, all he had to do was get the re-entry angle right by lining up an entire planet in the window. Whereas in a tractor like my Lamborghini, which has two brake pedals, four gear levers, two throttles, and 48 gears, you are constantly having to adjust something while not bashing into a nearby wall. And that's hard in my tractor, partly because its brakes don't really work, no matter which of the pedals you press, and partly because for the past few weeks, I've been disking the fields to keep Greta Thunberg happy. In simple terms, this is eco-ploughing. Only the disc I have weighs more than 4 tonnes, and it's mounted rather than towed, which means the front wheels of the tractor are mostly airborne, so I don't have much in the way of steering either. I think he's done quite a funny slant on, you know, your day-to-day struggles of grappling with the tractor, you're doing land work. His kind of nod to the kind of environmental side as well is quite interesting. Eco-ploughing, I mean, I haven't actually heard that term before, but obviously Clarkson, he can do what he wants. But it's interesting that he's, well, he's got an awareness, obviously, through the help of his advisors, his favourite advisors. He's got an awareness of how he should be maybe looking after the soil and environment.
What stuck out to me there was, did that say 48 gears? I mean, I didn't even think you could do that much with gears.
That is a lot, isn't it?
48? I mean, what are you trying to do? Drive up like a, well, I don't know, like, up the moon?
Yeah.
No, seriously though, 48 gears, I'm happy when I get a six.
Yeah, you're like, oh gosh, I've got a sixth gear here.
Well, I used to be, I'm in automatic now. Do you manually have to change to 48 gears?
Well, I'm not going to lie, I've never been in a Lamborghini tractor.
Yeah.
So, well, you never know. So I'm not sure how they actually, how their gearing works, but...
And if anybody listening has driven a tractor, a Lamborghini. With 48 gears, and would like to enlighten us, please do, because... Yeah, I think you should be able to fly to space for that.
We're now moving into winter, so I think this is a prime time to say make sure you do have your hot chocolates filled up. Because we're going to be talking about bovine blues. And again, I think Jeremy's about to hit on really quite a current, relevant, important topic in farming. So he goes on to say, this is the reality of wintertime farming. You want to get out there and mend the broken dam with a big and exciting machine, but you never can because there's always a meeting and there are always forms to fill in. Take my cows as a prime example. I thought they'd be fun to have around, but the government's cow police does everything in its power to make sure they aren't. I have to fill in a form if I want to take them for a walk or sell them or eat them. And every 6 months, I'm forced by law to test them for diseases. You don't have to do this if you have a cat. Or a rabbit. I have three children for crying out loud, and once I'd registered their births, I could do pretty much what I liked with them, apart from serving them up for Sunday lunch. What's more, they can come and go as they please. I think one of them is currently in Los Angeles, but I couldn't say for sure. Only if she were a cow would I be certain. Now, again, I do think he's hit the nail on the head. I haven't really had anything bad to say about this book so far, because I just think, in quite a light-hearted way, he hits on exactly the challenges which farmers are facing. So form filling takes over a farmer's life. And there are some times when it's absolutely needed. You know, traceability is very important. You know, records of medicines that we might have given to animals are very important. But they're time consuming and they take you away from the day-to-day farming.
I think it's really accessible as well, the way he puts it, because I understand what he's talking about.
Yeah,
I mean, I do anyway because I'm now in the industry, but I can really, really resonate with that. And I think if you're not from a farming background, you can actually go, oh, I didn't realise that farmers have to do all these forms. Farmers aren't just in the field. They've got all of this admin to do.
Absolutely. And I like how he touches on, obviously he's referring to TB testing, referring to obviously other animals, you know, pets, you don't have this obligation. And, you know, there's obviously lots of facts involved why we do TB test. But I think he, again, hits the nail on the head with he's forced to do this. And actually, there's a lot of talk that farmers aren't supported enough in actually eradicating TB, you know, and then the need for testing would be reduced.
And maybe there's some appreciation there, if you're reading this, to go, oh, actually, to get my Sunday roast, to get that meat on the table, farmers have to do a lot. It's not just put a cow in a field. So yeah, I think that's really, really important.
And I think then we return back to what you mentioned about British farming. The standards that we're going through every day on farm are really, really high and really, really rigorous.
So for the final bit that we're going to read out, we go to spring. Love spring. It's all about, you know, new life and getting over those winter months. I know for you, Bex, it's your lambing time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of gives you a light at the end of the tunnel, really, you know, quite literally light nights. And, you know, you're excited then for, you know, what's to come for the rest of the year.
So this part of spring is called What Not to Eat, and I think that's a really interesting title because I'm really interested to see what he says. Mm,
because the whole point of farming is about what you are eating almost. You're producing things. So yeah, interested to see what he says.
Are you ready?
Here we go.
So how then can I be a farmer? Because what I do all day is look after my cows and feed them and keep them warm so that one day in the not too distant future, I can murder them for money. No, hang on. It's worse than that, because actually I pay a hitman to murder them for me. That's
quite it.
A hard-hitting comment.
It is.
But then he goes on to say, it's weird. I truly love animals, and especially birds, but I also love roast beef and chicken and foie gras.
Foie gras?
Foie gras. Foie gras. Foie gras. It's not a palm off in Borough. Sorry, I will start again. It's weird. I truly love animals and especially birds, but I also love roast beef and chicken and foie gras and baby sturgeon and oysters and pork and ham and bacon. And get this for added confusion. While I'll happily shoot a partridge so that I can eat it with some sprouts and a bit of mashed potato, I won't shoot an equally delicious woodcock. Why? No idea. I've long held a belief that we only really care about animals that are one of three things. Cute, magnificent, or delicious. Attenborough, for instance, rarely covers the stickleback, but actually, it's more muddled than that. I would happily shoot a grey squirrel, and have, but could not even break a whisker on its red cousin. I wouldn't hurt an otter, but would happily stamp repeatedly on the head of a badger. And even though the farm's deer are laying waste to my trees, I really struggle with inviting someone over to walk them down the road. I think all of us are similarly conflicted. Even the most hardcore peace and love vegan will smash a wasp over the head with a copy of The Socialist Worker if it's being annoying. They will also spray their holiday hotel room with mozzie killer before they go out for dinner. And even if they are so fanatical they don't do either of those things, I bet they'd be happy for someone to shoot a crocodile if it was eating them at the time. Wow.
I think he makes some extremely good points there. And basically hints that we've all been conflicted at some point. Even farmers have been conflicted at some point. But I think for me, the thing which means that I can rest assured and eat meat is that I know that the things that we're producing on farm and where we buy our produce from, those things have been produced to the highest animal welfare and the environmental standards as well. They're trying to be as sustainable as possible.
I mean, we've both touched on it before. You've considered being vegetarian when you were younger. I have. And we do have this kind of, I think, a crossroads in life you come to and you realise what that produce on your plate is. And it's trying to kind of come to terms with that and accept it. And I think Jeremy really hits that there saying, I truly love animals. I love animals.
But I love animals.
But I do love my food. And I think it's also really interesting the fact that he touches on kind of which animals we say are okay to eat and which aren't. And I think some of that is to do with kind of the social construct of that. I do. I think we, you know, it's to do with, for instance, the red squirrels we know are endangered. So we need to protect those. So yeah, I think there's definitely a social construct playing there. And I think he puts it quite well.
Absolutely. I think the selectivity of our choices is a really, really good point. You know, even people who decide not to eat meat are still selective over some of their decisions regarding animals. And I think another point which we've talked about before as well is that not all of our land can be used to produce crops or vegetables. You know, some areas of Britain are just only suited for livestock production.
And people would go hungry, or we'd have to import, surely, if we couldn't have livestock and it was just arable and vegetables.
Absolutely, and livestock forms such an important part of the arable crop rotation cycle as well, you know, in terms of the manure they're producing, the cycle where you can put temporary grass in your arable rotation, and it's a really important combined approach between livestock and, you know, and crop and vegetable production.
And if anyone's listening and they are perhaps vegetarian or vegan or a farmer or meat eater, I think I'd love to know their thoughts, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's the same with any of our episodes. We do absolutely love to hear from people who have watched and listened to them. So yeah, please do get in touch.
And perhaps in our next Sunday Stories, we'll be reading some of those out.
Absolutely.
So I have a final question for you, Rebecca.
Oh, go on.
Do you think, because we can't ask him yet, do you think Clarkson is Team Boots or Team Heels?
Oh, he's got wellies on.
But he's got a Lamborghini tractor.
He's Team Boots, okay?
Does that not scream Team Heels? Driving in my 48 gear Lamborghini? Team Heels.
He's got to be Team Boots.
Well, we'd love to know. So if you fancy tagging him in and asking him, that would be great. Hashtag Team Heels of. Well, thank you so much, guys, for joining us. We hope you really enjoyed this Sunday Stories, and we'll be back for the next one.
Yep, we have some really exciting new books to talk about again. If you've got any suggestions, though, as well, you know, we'd be more than happy to hear if there's any books that you've read which have a really good Back British Farming message.
As always, if you love what we do, please give us a like. You can hit the subscribe button as well and follow us on our channels to stay up to date with what we do.
We look forward to seeing you for our next Sunday Stories.
I was going to do a good night.
And people will never sleep again.